And welcome to Community Connects. And today we're here with my co-host Simon Rush, as normal, Councillor Simon Rush.
Yes, good afternoon, and I've got the time right for once. I'm calling it afternoon, not good morning. Makes a pleasant change, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And we're very fortunate here to continue our very successful Behind the Badge series. And we've got Chief Superintendent Simon Crick, who is the Borough Commander for two boroughs, which have been combined, Waltham Forest and Newham, into the Basic Command Unit North East. And he took up post several months ago, and he's here today to share his views with us on what it's like to see his career come full circle, because he did start off on the beat in Newham, and take us through some of the things. So, Simon, basic question, where are you from?
So, good afternoon, everybody, and delighted to be here. Thank you for the invitation. It means a lot for me to be able to come and talk to your listeners. I'm originally from Derbyshire, so I was a village lad from Derbyshire, South Derbyshire.
Right.
Moved down to London after I finished university. Joined the Met in 1992 when I was posted to Newham as a PC. So, as you've just alluded to, really, my career's gone full circle, and I'm really, really proud to be the Borough Commander for Newham and Waltham Forest, having started here as a PC some 30 years ago now. Actually, 30 years in the job this month, so
It's an anniversary.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Almost like a birthday.
But there is a sort of link from your origins, because I believe Derbyshire's always been famous for its railway industry.
More famous for its football club, I would suggest. The mighty Derby County.
Can I have no comment on that one?
But yeah, obviously an industrial town. The railway, Rolls-Royce as well, were very, very famous from Derby, still are. Still embedded in the communities there. So, good place to grow up when I was a kid. But obviously not really moved back there since I came down here 32 years ago. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's just the reason I say there's a link is because there used to be a very large railway works over in Stratford.
Yeah.
And that was for over a century. And they claim to hold the record for the fastest assembly of a locomotive engine.
Oh, really?
So, interesting. But that's something else. What was it that first got you interested in policing?
So, my dad was a police officer in Derbyshire. He was a sergeant in Derbyshire Police. And my brother was also in Staffordshire Police. So, I'd always been exposed to policemen's tales, if you like, from my dad. When I was a little bit older, he used to go down the pub and have a glass of Coke with him and his friends and hear some of the exciting tales that had sort of gone on during the shift. So I suppose that whet my appetite a little bit for it. But it had also always seemed a very, very interesting and exciting role. I think the beauty of it, and I can vouch for this now, having been in for 30 years, is that you never really know what you're going to get. Every single day is different, and that's not changed from day one to today, for instance. I don't know what's going to happen this afternoon. Something could happen in Stratford, and I'll be called away and having to deal with a critical incident. So it's incredibly interesting. The diversity of roles that you can perform as well, I think, was always attractive to me. There's not many organisations you can join today that you could ride a horse, drive a boat, fly in a helicopter, drive a police car around the streets of East London lawfully on blue lights, and get involved in many of the fantastic things that, you know, you get involved with. I'm talking about, you know, royal ceremonies. We've just seen the incredible funeral procession of Her Majesty the Queen, the late Her Majesty the Queen, and I had a lot of my officers actually queuing up to take part in that, because it's an historical event and people want to be part of that.
Right.
And that to me is one of the main attractions. It's just the diversity of what you can get involved with.
Well, one of the things you didn't mention but I'm familiar with is I was taken to the XL Centre recently for Discover Dogs. And they had the West Midlands Police Dogs team there, which was very, very popular, and just showing you some of the different things they do, apart from sort of biting the arms of criminals, but the searching and the other things and sorts of things.
I was very fortunate. After I left Newham, after about 12 years' service, I actually went to the Dog Support Unit Training School in Keston in Kent and worked there for 18 months as a sergeant. And did my sort of basic dog training course, which was fabulous, and then was sort of privy to some of the training that goes on with those police dogs, and I have to say they're incredible. And that was a really enjoyable 18 months. And I had a couple of police dog puppies, actually, that were given to sort of, they call it walking them on.
Right.
So that you get them as a young puppy, and then you develop them, do some basic
socialism,
socialise them. And one of them became a firearms dog in South London. So that was really nice and a fabulous experience. And I found myself standing in fields in Kent, training German Shepherd puppies of 16 weeks old. So it was incredible, great experience.
Well, it sounds like you had a good time.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So that's how you got into policing, genetics.
Yeah.
Well, family environment, which I believe was the same with your predecessor, Richard Tucker. He's came from a family of policemen, so it seems like it's...
Runs in the blood, I think. Runs in the blood. Once you've been exposed to it, it's...
contagious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did your parents encourage you to join the force at the time as well?
Not really, no.
I just wondered, because sometimes it's drilled in, you're going to join, and other times, no, you're not.
I think I was very lucky with my parents. They basically said to me, do what makes you happy, and I think that's good advice from any parent. I mean, I originally trained in photography, film and television. That was my degree. Finished in 1990. But as is often the case when you study something, you then tend not to want to pursue it as
that's
a career.
True. But I think that's possibly a career when you retire. Yeah, any directors possibly, out there listening?
It's always a useful skill. But yeah. I sort of came out of university after 3 years and didn't really want to do photography. So I got a number of jobs in the city just to pay the rent, really.
Yep.
But then, as I've already described, the temptation was too much and I applied. So that's how it got me into this organisation.
Well, it seems to be, we've interviewed several people who've had quite long careers in the police, so some people seem to find it suits them and they stay for quite a while.
Yeah, I have to say, I've been very lucky. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I think I probably went through a period of 3 or 4 years, sort of mid-service, where I started to question whether I wanted to stay in the organisation. Yep. But I think that's normal for anybody.
Yeah, I think we all do that. Yeah, whatever we do for a living.
In life you've got, I think you hit some sticky patches, don't you? But I've always had the philosophy that do a couple of years and then do something else. And when I meet the new recruits, which I do every five weeks, I always say to them, it's such an expansive organisation with so many different opportunities. Yep. You know, expose yourself to as many different areas of the organisation as you possibly can, because in some sense that's what keeps you fresh, that's what keeps you motivated. There's nothing worse than getting into a rut in this organisation. I think if you can keep yourself moving forward, learning new skills, learning about the organisation in different ways and meeting different people, I think is what keeps you fresh and motivated, and that's certainly the philosophy I've tried to carry through my career.
You must have seen a lot of changes during the 30 years.
I've seen the circle go round, the wheel go round a few times, let's put it that way, I think. Well,
new initiatives coming in, you think, we did that 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't think there's any new initiatives, to be honest. I think...
revamp with a different name.
Things come round again. I was here when neighbourhoods policing was first launched. In Newham, actually, that must have been about 20 years ago. There was a big relaunch of neighbourhood policing. And again, we're seeing now with our new commissioner a push towards the best community policing we've had in London. So that for me is really good news. I really believe in neighbourhood policing. I think it's the right way forward.
It's an interesting point of view, because it's something we discussed on quite a few of the shows in Behind the Badge, and it really seems to stem from the basic police ethos of, in the UK at least, policing by consent, which is linked to why police officers actually don't want to be armed on the job, because otherwise you're drifting towards a sort of French-style gendarmerie.
Yeah.
And so, yes, policing by consent seems to go hand-in-hand with neighbourhood policing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I've worked in neighbourhood policing at both sergeant rank and the inspecting rank. I was the borough commander over at North Area, and we had a really, really good neighbours portfolio there. And I've really seen the difference that effective neighbourhood policing can bring to local communities. A lot of the issues that local residents will talk to us about are antisocial behaviour, low-level drug dealing. They're the things that blight people's lives, and I think there's the ability for dedicated neighbourhoods teams to actually target those specific issues really effectively, in partnership with local authority colleagues and with various other organisations, to really make a difference to people's lives. And I think that's why I'm so sort of I believe in that neighbourhood's approach. It's really, really successful when it's done properly.
Could I ask, just jump in and ask a question?
Yeah,
when you're talking about low-level drug crime, which is, I suppose, somebody you, one of your officers may come across on the street, and it's pretty obvious what's going on. Do the officers take it away from them, stub it out, and leave it there to obviously do a search, see how much they've got on them, and if it's only for personal use, is that the end of it, or does it go a bit further because it's still an illegal drug, whatever, if it's cannabis, for example?
No, we certainly don't just leave it or throw it down a drain, for instance. We have to dispose of it. It's an illegal substance, and we'll do whatever we can to remove it from the streets, whether it be cannabis or Class A. It's illegal as far as I'm concerned.
I know
there are views within society around cannabis and whether or not it should be made lawful or not, but at the moment it's not.
It's not. Yeah, I agree. I think it should be made legal, but that's a whole different story. And while it isn't, it isn't. And
exactly.
I've got that being a bonnet with e-scooters, as it happens, because they're everywhere, and currently they're not supposed to be anywhere on a public highway, be it a park, street, road, wherever it happens to be, but they're everywhere. And I know, obviously, officers can't go around stopping people every 10 seconds. You won't do anything else. But again, when it's legal, perhaps I'll have a different view on that as well.
Okay. Yeah, we've had it discussed in a slightly different way when we're dealing with people who are teaching. Sometimes when you're trying to run a class as 30 children, sometimes you have to have constructive ignoring, because while someone's doing something relatively minor over here, you've got to keep your focus on the big thing. And I'm sure that happens a lot with police. You have to pick your moments and what's worth following up on and what's worth... It's not you can't do it, but you just, it's not your priority at that moment.
Yeah, I mean, I've got just over 1,500 police officers on North East BCU, so that covers both Newham and Waltham Forest. So, and that's split down into five different strands.
That's not very many, because we've got over 250,000 people living in Newham alone.
Yes.
So that's...
I mean, it goes back to your policing by consent. You know, the reason we can police with relatively no numbers is because people... respect the police in general, and we operate on that consensual basis. So I could always do with more officers. You know, I think, you know, a lot of my strands are struggling with the demand. But obviously we've got a new commissioner coming in now, and I'm sure he'll be looking at the resourcing picture as well.
Because having the BCU being the way it is, you're going from basically policing Wanstead Flats to policing somewhere like Stratford. It seems to be an enormous variety within this unit.
Yeah, it is. You know, Waltham Forest and Newham, both very different boroughs, aligned politically, but very different boroughs in terms of policing. There are challenging areas in both boroughs. Obviously, you've got the leafy areas of Chingford and places like that. And then you've got the more urban areas around Leighton in Waltham Forest, which is very similar to much of the areas in Stratford. So, you know, challenges in both boroughs, I have to say. And obviously, we're very conscious that to spread the resourcing as evenly as we possibly can to make sure that people in both boroughs receive the best possible service that we can deliver.
Yeah, I'm the reason I think Stratford must be a challenge is just when there's a match day or when there was a Rugby World Cup on, you suddenly get 80,000 people all coming into a very small area all at once, and obviously that attracts some of the ne'er-do-well
elements.
Yeah,
it's as you know, an international transport hub with a huge shopping precinct there as well. One of the most rapidly developing areas of London, the Olympic Park, and all the companies that are moving to the Olympic Park. Hugely challenging. A lot of my resources are put into Stratford to try and negate some of the issues we've seen around robbery, street violence. But then we also have challenging areas in Waltham Forest as well, where we put a significant number of resources to counter some of those crime trends that we see.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned earlier akin to neighbourhood policing is the partnerships going on. And when I first came on the radio show, which must have been about 3.5 years ago, we were talking about knife crime here. And I was saying we've got a pattern, which we are now following in Newham, which was based on the old Strathclyde, I think it's now called Police Scotland, where Glasgow was the knife crime capital of Europe at the time. There were more incidents and deaths there than anywhere else. And the police at the time said, we cannot arrest our way out of this. We need to form partnerships. And that led to that whole violence reduction unit approach of, and I know it's an old hackneyed phrase, of multidisciplinary, but getting the police to work with the local politicians and council, to get them to work with medical staff, probation service, courts and everything else. And it seems to be, well, at least in Glasgow, it was very effective in bringing down knife crime. And I know there are various boards with the Mayor of Newham, with the Violence Reduction and Youth Safety Board and things, where it seems, as well as having neighbourhood policing where you're working with the community, bringing these different partnership organisations in. Is there anything you'd like to give a view on that?
No, I think you've hit on a really important area. And I think, you know, as the police, we cannot solve any problem really on our own. You know, we've long gone the days where we would take absolute responsibility for every issue within society. I think a partnership approach is the only way forward. And as I said to you when I first arrived at your studio today, my role is really around building relationships and making sure that those partnerships are really effective so that we can deliver a more effective service. I'm very fortunate here that I've got two local authorities and some fantastic people within those local authorities who are likewise very keen to work more effectively and more closely with myself and my colleagues in the police to drive down crime and make our communities safer. So, you know, we have community safety partnerships, we have violence reduction unit meetings, my superintendents link in regularly with key people from the local authorities to make working more effective. You know, we've got the World Cup coming up, and this is just an example of where we'll be working closely with local authority partners to ensure that people are safe and that they can enjoy that tournament, you know, in safety and have a good time with their family and friends. But it's not just about police, it's about what local authorities can bring around licensing support, youth workers, all of that sort of cohort of extra resource which local authorities have available. And I'm pleased to say I'm very fortunate to have very supportive local authorities to deliver on that.
Great. Well, we'll take a break for some messages and we'll be back just after this.
Revive FM
94.0
on the radio,
on your mobile
and online.
And welcome back to Community Connect on Revive FM. And we're continuing with the second part of the interview with Chief Superintendent Simon Crick. And just before the break, we were talking about the value of partnerships and what can be done there to magnify the effect that the police can have by working with anchor institutions and community partners, and how things can be taken forward from there. Have you got any thoughts, Simon, as putting on your councillor hat?
Well, community, but I think the answer is, well, the police do it and the local council service does it as well as reaching out to each other, aren't we?
Absolutely.
And I could suggest in the new boundary in Plaster West Kennington East, we're still waiting for the police panel thing to be put together.
Oh, the police panels, yeah. Should we go on to them?
Yeah, so they're quite important residents and councillors, liaise with the police and along, and I think they're really important.
For the benefit of listeners, the Boundary Commission changed the boundaries of the various wards in Newham, and also as a result, and that's an attempt to rebalance the political wards with the population in the borough. And everyone knows we've had a very fast-growing population in different areas at different speeds in the borough. So the Boundary Commission created a couple of extra wards and also redrew the boundaries of other wards. So there are now 24 wards.
Yeah, I think it's 24.
Some of them are new, and so they didn't have the police ward panels operating in the past. And also some of the police ward panels had struggled because, as so many other organisations did, during lockdown when people couldn't meet up. And police ward panels, it's very difficult to run them actually by remote due to the fact that some people are digitally excluded. And so what's undergoing now is, the side will say from a political point of view, that Newham councillors who sit on the panels, as well as local residents who are invited to join and the Metropolitan Police themselves, it's a case of, it provides a forum for the police to work with local councillors and the community. And one of the interesting things that they do is set the priorities for where the focus should be in that ward. But
obviously, every so often, a particular couple of streets are hit with, say, car theft. So obviously I've seen that come up at those police panel things. Because it's knowledge from not just councillors but from the residents as well, isn't it? You can't know everything. And something I came across, one of my neighbours had his car broken into, just smashed a glass a couple of months back. And have you reported it? No. Well, how are the police going to know about it if a particular area has been hit if people don't report it in the first place?
No, absolutely. So I think, you know, as I've already alluded to, big believer in neighbourhood policing. I think ward panels are really, really important. I met with the chair of the Newham Safe Neighbourhood Board on Friday just to discuss how things were going, because it's important to me to understand the level of detail sometimes around some of these issues. And clearly, I think, you know, coming out of a pandemic, I think there has been some issues around continuity of those panels being held effectively. They're really important, as you've already alluded to, because they give people the voice that they crave. And, you know, as I've already said, if somebody's smoking drugs at 3 o'clock in the morning, a big group outside of your back door, then that can be quite catastrophic.
Yeah, of course it can, especially in the summer months, obviously, with the windows open and things.
Yes, of course we focus on burglary and violence because that's really important and we need to take men of violence off the street. But actually, if you look at the number of victims of robbery across Newham, the chances of you becoming a victim are probably quite small. The chances of you being exposed to antisocial behaviour and therefore your quality of life issues is very high.
It's probably a lot higher.
Yeah, and that's the thing that affects people and their confidence in us as a service.
I think it's almost today, it's almost how things are perceived, and I think it's because we're internet connected. And if, for example, I walk out of here and see an incident, I don't tend to do it, but plenty of others do it, it's immediately on Twitter and various other social media feeds. Yeah. So everyone then jumps to, oh, it's horrific here. Yeah. Look at all of this.
Yeah.
But it was probably the same before we had the social media, but it's the way it's just almost in our face a lot.
Yeah,
there,
you know,
isn't
and,
it?
As a service, we need to try and keep up with that. You know, so we've got our own social media accounts on Twitter, Nextdoor, Facebook.
Could you do me a favour? I do follow it, but could you put the Met Police Twitter feed out so anyone that's listening wants to hook into it if you don't mind?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
But I think, you know, it's around trust and confidence and you know, policing by consent. And the only way we police by consent is by having the trust and confidence of our people who live in our communities. So it's important that we hear what their concerns are and that we're seen to do things about it.
Yeah.
You know, we've had significant challenges around resourcing in terms of people being abstracted from neighbourhoods. And when I've spoken to ward panels, I was on the Waltham Forest ward panel chair meeting a few weeks back. One of their biggest concerns was around abstraction, so their dedicated officers being taken away. And I had to explain that on occasion, I have to ensure that my emergency response is fully staffed.
Yeah,
sometimes
of course.
I have to take people out of dedicated neighbourhood teams, because if people are ringing 999, they expect a police officer to arrive as quickly as possible and certainly within 15 minutes. So there's always a balance and a compromise at times, but as I say, moving forward, neighbourhood policing, making those local impacts with local officers who people know and can contact, I think that's really important.
It's really important. And I think
being able to contact your local officer is really, really important.
It's actually quite good as well now. We both commented on it in the past, and we've seen it as a council. I'm always in and out of Greasy Spoons and cafes and God knows where else. It's always nice to bump into the local officer on the beat or whatever it's called these days, and you get to chat, they talk to whoever else is in there, and that builds that trust, doesn't
Absolutely.
It? Builds that old-fashioned Sweeney-type trust, if you like, when Jack Regan was in the pub getting information.
I totally understand that. As I say, when I look back at when I was a sergeant in Stratford and Newtown, you know, I worked down at Elmer Street with a number of people down there, local residents, and we worked really effectively and resolved a lot of issues around antisocial behaviour, you know, working with the local authority, but everybody knew who their local officers were. And I very much want to get back to that space.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really important.
Okay, so I went to a combined police ward panel meeting in East Ham where there were several were brought together. And that was quite interesting because one of the issues came up, just as you mentioned, the fact that there were crimes, and when they held out the stats for the area, they were showing the local crime, and people were saying, well, that's way too low. And the officer, with brilliant logic, said, I can only tell you what people reported. And that kicked off the whole thing about why don't people bother reporting. And I know people joke about it because they say it's an oxymoron, intelligent policing, but we've discussed it several times on the show in the past. If people don't report crimes and the information isn't there, it doesn't get recorded, and if it's not recorded, it won't get resources allocated to it. And it was actually a really interesting discussion, because at the end of it, at the end of the meeting, everyone left saying, right, and several of them were traders from High Street North and High Street South, who said, we'll make sure that we really make an effort now to report them, because we do understand that it shows up, it means something, and it will get us the resources we deserve.
So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, if people are subjected to criminality, I would strongly encourage them to report it. And there are so many ways now that you can report actual offences. Hopefully it makes it a lot more convenient for people as well. You know, the days of queuing at a police station, and I accept that a lot of our police stations have closed, but those days are gone. You can report online, you can report on Twitter even, and those reports will be passed through to my officers to investigate if there are investigative leads. So, you know, I strongly encourage all of your listeners to report any sort of criminal activity that takes place, and they're the victims of it. So yeah, it's really important that I understand where those patterns of criminal behaviour are.
It's one of the things I encourage as a counsellor, when obviously we get an awful lot of casework coming through antisocial behaviour, and always do encourage, yes, I will get onto it from the council side of things and get the relevant departments involved. Yeah. But you, and always go, you know you can actually put out an ASB incident via the Met app system, very much like the Love Thy Neighbour app. Again, it helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. You know, and obviously the local authority have their own reporting systems as well.
Yeah, of course.
Social behaviour, and we work closely with them as well. So lots of different ways to report. You know, I hope people are aware of all of the different ways in which they can report crime. Just going back to our Twitter handle.
Yes, thank you.
It's at MPS Newham. If you log on to that and follow us, there's some really useful updates.
Thank you. So that's at MPS Newham.
At MPS Newham.
Thank you.
Is the Twitter handle, yes.
And coming back to continuity, when I went along, not to the East End, but to my own local police war panel in Canning Town North, Sergeant Matt Taylor brought along 8 different officers because he said there's been so much chopping and changing going on. He brought people from the neighbouring wards, and he said, I just want to introduce the officers to all of the people here. So exactly as you said, so you can put a name to a face.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really good move.
Yeah, really, really good. I'm glad to hear that, Matt. I know he's well respected, is Matt. I think continuity in post is really, really important. So if I look across the neighbourhood's portfolio, I have schools officers, dedicated ward officers, both of which, those roles, rely upon consistency of relationship. And I think what we've seen up until this point is, because of a system that was brought in under the previous commissioner, where young constables in the first 2 years of their service were rotated around to give them exposure to different areas of the service. So in some ways, a really good philosophy, you know, rather than just staying in one strand, you're exposed to a number of different strands to make you a more rounded officer. But of course, to communities, to our communities, what they want to see is consistency.
Yep.
They want to see, they don't want somebody taken out of the dedicated ward officer post after 6 months because they're then going on to response. They want that person to be there. And I know, from working at several different ranks, including my current rank, that it takes time to embed those relationships with your local community, key stakeholders. And so if you're in post for 6 months, you're just starting to understand where the local issues are in terms of antisocial behaviour, in terms of crime, who your local ward panel members are, who your local vulnerable people are in your community. And I'm very hopeful over the next few days we will move to a position where there's more consistency and people remain in post for
the
first 2 years of their service, which I think will be really welcomed by our communities.
One thing, you mentioned dedicated officers, schools officers, dedicated ward officers. Earlier in the year, we interviewed PC Dave Sparks, who's a bicycle policeman.
Yeah, brilliant, Dave, yeah.
And so, he'd done some wonderful work in Waltham Forest. He's now looking to move that across the BCU over to get a BMX bike. Is the BMX bike park established in Newham?
He's already got one.
One
of my first borough commander duties was going to see Dave Sparks. Where was it? It was down in East Hampshire.
Goosley Park?
Goosley Park. I had the privilege of going down there with the local MP and local councillors. The deputy mayor was there as well to open up a BMX track, which had been provided free of charge for the local community by a national building firm.
Corporate donor.
Yeah, which was brilliant. And, you know, the young kids were down there going around on their bikes, really enjoying themselves. And it was great to see. And I know Dave's enhancing that and looking to open more in the near future. So it was brilliant. Great to see.
Yeah. Will he get involved in the skateboarding craze that seems to be coming back as well? I know it's slightly different. It's still got wheels.
That's an Olympic sport.
Sorry?
Yeah. Breakdancing. Yeah.
Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't realise that. Okay.
Yeah. I did meet PC Sparks on a community neighbourhoods meeting last Thursday, actually. He said he's actually coming to near where the bookshop is in Custom House to look at King George V Park as a potential site.
And I think the thing for me is that, you know, we've had some really, really bad publicity in the Met, quite rightly so, about some of the things that have happened. I've got 30 years service in. I could retire this month. I've decided to stay on because I truly and honestly believe that the people I work for, in the vast majority of cases, are outstanding human beings. They do some fantastic work. And Dave's a perfect example of that, where he's gone above and beyond his role to actually make the lives of young people far better than it would have been otherwise. And I think that's testament to him and to many of the other people that work within my teams on across North East. And I'm very proud of them, very proud of them.
Yeah, well, the local community in Custom House are certainly looking forward to a facility like that because it's known as the land that time forgot, because we don't have a pub, we don't have a community centre, we haven't got functioning religious organisations involved with the community. So something, in one way, as simple but as powerful as a BMX bike track and unit will make a huge difference to especially the young local people, because we talk about we'll stop them drifting away from society, keep them out of gangs, but if there's nothing for them to do, the youth centre's about to be demolished and rebuilt, which is great, but it just means there won't be anything for the next couple of years, and that's really will fill the void.
And this is a really interesting point. I'd just like to come back on this around ward panels, if I may. So, you know, ward panels are supposed to be representative of wards.
Yep.
If I'm honest, I think there's a challenge back to me, from me, would be to make it more representative, and part of that representation would be around young people. You know, when I go to the various panels that I attend to introduce myself and to talk about my vision for the BCU, very rarely do I see young people represented. And I'd really love that to change. So if there's any of your listeners who'd be interested in getting involved in ward panels, then please get in touch and we can get into contact with them and hopefully get them involved in things, because young people's voices are really, really important. And I would very much like to have them on my, you know, when I have a critical incident, I'd like to get their opinion on how we respond.
I think one way to try and get through to the younger people is, because obviously a lot of young people, especially those that are studying, tend to use our libraries quite a lot.
Yeah.
So perhaps when the police panels are in particular wards are coming up, get it into the libraries, and we would particularly welcome this age group because we want to hear their views. It's really, you know, a bit of advertising in those sort of, the New Vic College. And
another example is Stop and Search. You know, I lived experience around Stop and Search for me is invaluable from both the young person's perspective and the police officer's perspective. And I was a Stop and Search lead in Hackney previously and in Camden and Islington, and we did some fantastic work with young people. So I'd very much like to understand the young people's perspective on policing in Europe. I think it's really important.
I suppose the other way around to do that with young people is yourselves, officers into the youth club, is explaining why.
Which I'm sure you do. They go to schools, they go to youth clubs. We do a ride-along scheme, as you know, where members of the public are able to come out and patrol with my officers in the back of a response car, which again is a really good experience for the community members, and I get a lot of positive feedback around, you know, what's happened on that ride along. So again, anybody who'd like to take part in that, please let me know.
Thank you.
That's definitely looks promising. The other one of the other things that seems to have helped with stop and search and incidents is the police wearing body cams, because now it's not just he said this, she said that, vice versa. And is it PEP, the panels that evaluate the footage?
Yes, they are. Yeah. So the panels are there for if we have a contentious stop and search, for instance. It's a panel which consists of members of the community who, if one of my senior leaders' teams raises an issue, That panel will convene and will view the video and can give an assessment on it from a community perspective to then encourage communication outwards to try and resolve situations or to feedback advice to us as to how best to deal with it. So really good panel. Something which is long overdue and I think is really, really beneficial. And I know one of my chief inspectors from the Naples portfolio leads on that, and he holds panels once every month, and they will view body-worn video footage with members of the public to get feedback and comment and to try and improve our professionalism around stop and search. So really, really useful.
Great. We'll take a short pause for some messages, and then we'll talk about some of Simon's personal experiences with the police.
Revive FM
94.0. On the radio,
on your mobile,
and online.
Welcome back to the final session, and Simon's just going to talk to us about his recent encounters with the police.
I think you should word that slightly differently, to be honest with you, Dean.
Engagement.
I'm getting all tied up now, and that's not by our policeman. There was a day of action was a couple of weeks ago. I think it was across several boroughs, and some of us councillors were invited to attend. I thought, absolutely, I'm going to attend one of those. The unit I was with, they very kindly met me on the street corner, not down my street, because what I didn't want is neighbours to go, hello, hello, what's going on with a policeman? I'm getting into a policeman's car for obvious, you know, people jump to wrong conclusions, don't they? It was basically a flight. We were looking out for fly tips, checking out the local estates, looking at some of the rebuild of rubbish, and where it had just been clearly just left. The officers having words with various residents. And it was just really interesting to see how they actually work out there. One of the streets was actually, and there was a pavement area, and it had clearly been a group of builders had been at work the last couple of weeks, i.e. working out of three, doing stuff in three or four different homes, because it was a similar build-up of building material just left and abandoned. The officer spoke to one of the residents at the time who made a phone call to said builder, and the number was unavailable. What a surprise. So you could see the work hadn't been done that professionally in the first place, and nor had organising the things to take the rubbish away. They just abandoned it, and it was interesting to watch how the officers worked, looking through some of that rubbish to try and ascertain who the builders were, as it were.
Yeah, and I think the broader issue here is when you start to get streets which attract fly tipping.
Yeah, that's the other problem.
It's called the broken window effect, which I think was brought in from America a few years ago, and it's very true. If you see a street which is full of rubbish and fly tipped and
you don't
abandoned
care.
Cars, it leads to that fear of crime, which yep. then leads to more fly tipping, more abandoned cars, more broken windows, and I think it's really important. So, it costs millions of pounds every year for the local
authorities
to remove it, which is the first thing. But more importantly, as well, is that it feeds people's sense of fear of crime when you get a rundown area. So I think it's really important we try and keep on top of that.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable, and that was something else popped up as well. And you know, I just can't remember what it was. It's totally gone though, because I got distracted because our second guest arrived. I'm sorry?
So many exciting things.
Yeah, it was really exciting, and I think the most exciting part was, and it didn't happen to my council colleague friend, because I met him later in the same pub, I actually got dropped off by the officers on the way en route back, so they obviously continued on, but it's just interesting to see how it works. You know, you've got the green, the stickers that go on the rubbish, and it was a simple question, does that work? Because sticking labels on things, where does that stop things? We used to be surprised, because if we've established who it belongs to, the following day when we return, it's gone back to where we believed it had come from, because people don't read it, so
exactly.
It does work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very, very good. Okay. Coming back to the partnerships, I know Newham House's services are quite interested in working with the police, and they've actually hired, I believe it could be an ex-police officer, with the role of design out crime officer, and that's working on things that sound really basic, like making sure that the lighting in the street works and it's all the lights are on, but there are the right type of lights and they show not just the road but also the pavement and things. Another one is the line of sight. We've had some feedback from women who don't like it. You look down a road and it's sketchy and dodgy and there's little areas where there could be a bin or something, and it's just a question of designing that sort of thing. And then the paving, getting the paving right, because as you said, when there's a bit of fly tipping, there's an abandoned car, the pavement's all broken, the curb's snapped.
Yeah.
It creates that that ambience, that feeling that it's not safe, even though it might well be.
Yeah. No, you know, it goes back to our conversation earlier today. There are so many different elements to reducing and preventing crime. And I think designing our crime advisors play a really critical role in that. And, you know, every modern development that gets past planning now has to have design our crime advisors involved in that, to do exactly what you've just said. You know, look at the street lighting, look at the locks on the doors, look at the security, the CCTV, the shrubbery. You know, is it going to grow to overhang the pavement and make that area feel unsafe to our women in the community, etc. So really, really important role. And I think it's, you know, if you'd have had those design our crime advisors years ago, then I think some of the problem areas that we know exist across the borough wouldn't be as they are today. And I think that's a really positive sign for me, that things will improve through design. And I think that's a really important aspect.
Well, I've seen it happen myself because I live over by West Ham, by what's technically known as the Great Northern Outfall. When I was young, it used to be called the Sewer Bank.
Yes,
now it's called the Greenway.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was young, it was a grim, forbidding place. It wasn't lit.
Yeah.
It was badly maintained, everything else. And when Thames Water refurbished it, they worked with the Metropolitan Police Service and the local authorities, and they've re-tarmacked it all. They've put in lighting so you can see white lighting where there are stairs, green lighting where there are ramps for people with bicycles or disabled people. They've put a lot of lights up there, and there's certain areas that have even got CCTV on there. And I've just seen the number of people using the Greenway now has gone up phenomenally, and you see a lot of women walking dogs on their own. Obviously people feel comfortable and safe there in a way that when I was young it wasn't there.
Yeah.
It just goes to show the point that yes, you can actually change physical environments and it makes people feel more comfortable.
Absolutely, and I think that's a brilliant example actually of how you can do that. I think just honing in on that point a little bit, so we have got an app which people can use. It's called a Safe Street app, or Street Safe app. There's a QR code available which people can scan, and then vulnerable members of the community, whether they be women or young people, can actually put in the locations where they feel unsafe. And I'd really encourage people to utilise that, because it gives us and our partners an understanding of those areas of Newham which they may feel particularly unsafe in. And again, that may be because of street lighting, or people hanging around on street corners, or the presence of licensed premises where predominantly males stand outside and may make suggestive comments towards women. All of these things, which if people feed back into us, we can start to take action on to make people, women in particular, feel safer on our streets, which is really important.
And this is part of this reduction of violence against girls
and
women.
So violence against women and girls, you know, very, very high on my priorities, and there's a number of things that we're doing. That is one of them, Street Safe app. We actively target our offenders who are outstanding, wanted offenders, around violence against women and girls, so that they receive the full force of the law and justice is given to victims. We also do an initiative called Walk and Talk, where again our neighbourhoods officers will go on a walk around with people, women from the community, and gives those women an opportunity to point out on a one-to-one basis with an officer some of the areas of their local community where they may feel unsafe, and explain the reasons why as well, and just talk through some of the personal safety issues which they feel, which I think has been a really well-received initiative, and it's something which again our neighbourhood teams lead on. So, you know, lots of things going on. I'm very, very committed to violence against women and girls, and anything I can do to reduce people's concerns or fears and I'm happy to engage with anybody, any of your listeners, if they've got any other ideas that they'd like us to consider, then please let me know and we can take that forward.
Well, that gives us an opportunity to get some feedback, and we'll definitely get that information back to you.
Thank you.
We're coming up to the end of the interview. Once again, time's run away with us. Are there any particular initiatives or programmes coming up in the near future you think worth highlighting?
So we've got OpSceptre next week, which is a drive around knife crime. There'll be lots of police activity taking place, again, targeting offenders. Around the use of knives on our streets, which we are obviously trying to remove off the streets. That's being led by one of my Detective Chief Inspectors on the borough, and there'll be some publicity going out on our social media sites about what that actually entails, but lots of proactive work, reactive work as well, reassurance to our local communities around knife crime, because I do understand that in Newham particularly, knife crime is seen as a real concern in terms of levels of violence. So always a really welcomed initiative. We try and get knives off the streets. We will be doing warrants, etc., and arresting men of violence over the next week, even more than we would be doing normally. So really looking forward to that.
Well, I think that's I think we've covered quite a lot in our very first interview. So I'd just like to say thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chief Superintendent Simon Crick, and we look forward to hopefully seeing you at a future date.
Thank you very much. Thank you.